You're listening to Sounds Good. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I'm Tracy Ross. I'm joined in the studio today by Kate Lochte and also MSU Libraries Wesley Bolin and George Cumbie of Paducah, who was an MSU student working at WKMS when we signed on the air. Welcome, good morning, and thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. It's so cool to be with you both. I have to tell you first, though, Tracy, you said if Sounds Good had been here when the station signed on, this is kind of the music that would have been played, but oh no.
It's actually not what we did play.
The gentleman who was in charge of the station at the time, Mr. Howard, said that the main reason for WKMS-FM is that you can get hard rock anytime on any station, but you can't turn on your radio and hear easy listening music.
You can never get enough easy listening. Definitely my theory on life.
This is an article that Wesley Bolin found in a quest to research 45 years ago for another entity on campus, and we're fortunate that he's interested in WKMS. And George was the original engineer for WKMS when it started in the radio center in Wilson Hall.
Yes, I was.
And how did you walk onto that gig?
Well, I started school here in 68, fall of 68. I was 17 years old, graduated from Heath High School in McCracken County. And I had a background in music. I played drums in several bands in high school, but I also got into the technical side of being really infatuated with electronics and building my own amplifiers and stereo systems and the band sound systems and all that. So when I started school, I don't remember how soon after school started in that fall of 68, but I was majoring in radio TV, which was under the journalism department at the time, and I think I was over in a class at Wilson Hall, and someone came up to me, and we got to talking, and they said something about the radio center, and I was like, what's that, you know, and they told me, and I said, well, yeah, I'd be interested in that. So we went up to the third floor where the control room studios were, and I looked around and everything, and I got to talking to several people. And when they found out I was kind of a technician-type person or an engineering-type person, they said, wow, we need somebody to be like an engineering director, a student engineering director. And I said, well, what's the requirements for that or responsibilities? And I think it was Mr. Craycraft, Morse Craycraft, that was telling me that. And I said, sure, I'll do that. And so I just jumped in, you know, hook, line, and sinker and did it, you know, and became like kind of in charge of the control room. I worked on the old Gates console, and I was thrilled to walk in the studios today and see you still got two turntables in here, even in today's technology. We had two big old 16-inch Gates turntables, and we had the old Gates board, and we had two tape recorders, a Magna Quarter full track quarter-inch machine as mono machine, and we had an old Ampex PR-10, which was a half-track mono machine. That was it. That was technology then. There was no internet, no cell phones, no microwaves even, no computers. I don't think there was as I told you earlier, there wasn't a computer on campus that I knew of. I don't, you know, there was way before computers. We had none of that.
And But your life career evolved to, we were sitting in my office a while ago, and George has a recording studio in Nashville and has been in recording and video production your entire life, and you said it was like half the size of my office, one of your audio consoles.
I've got a console.
So you've come a long way.
Oh, yeah. I've bought a lot of equipment over the years, and my wife will tell you that our garage is still full of a lot of it that I haven't gotten rid of yet. But, and like I told you, I have to give credit to my days here at Murray because that meant so much to me as far as formulating the rest of my life. I met my wife, who I'm still married to after 45 years. We got married in June of 70, so right after the station went on the air. And we're still married 45 years later, two daughters and two grandchildren. And, you know, it all stemmed out of here. I mean, what I, in essence, am today, if you want to say that, all started with the radio center here. I've got just incredibly fond memories of it, and it was just a huge part of my life. And I didn't realize how much it was until I, years later, looked back and regretted leaving it, you know, and seeing what it become. You know, I helped actually put the station on the air with me and Mr. McClure, who was the hired engineer. I was a student, an unpaid person, but he was the hired engineer that came on after me and took over a lot of that. And we put the rack together for the first microwave transmitter, which was in Wilson Hall, and we ran coax, or somebody did, over to the top of the business building, which was the tallest building up on this part of the campus, and microwaved out the transmitter at Farmington. And we had a telemetry equipment, too, to turn the transmitter on and off through the microwave and read, temperature readings and output power and all that. So we had all that in Wilson Hall, and I helped him put that together, and we did test and played music and put it on the air to listen to it and see what it sounded like and did things. And I'm pretty sure I was here the day of the dedication day when we were looking at pictures earlier. I'm pretty sure I was here that day. I had already left school at that time. I left my sophomore year right before that to pursue a career as a rock and roll drummer on the road, which I regretted leaving. But
no,
I came back for that ceremony, I'm pretty sure, because I know my wife was living. We weren't married yet, but she was living in an apartment here with some girls. Uh-huh. And I know I came back for that. So I'm not in any of the pictures, but I'm pretty sure I was there. Yeah.
Well, it's great to have you here today.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be here.
You had sent us some photos, including one of Jerry Pritchard, who mm-hmm. is one of our Board of Regents members now, but she was on the air as a radio television student. And then, Wesley, you were approached by journalism folks out of Murray State News to research its beginnings.
Yeah, well, it started this past week was the 45th anniversary of the shootings at Kent State. And Kent State contacted Murray State Libraries and asked us to look through our archives to find photos of the student response at that time. So I was going through old copies of the Murray State News, and one of the other articles had that fantastic headline, WKMS to offer easy listening music, which I just loved. And so looking through, I figured out that about a week later from the period I was already researching was when the station went on the air. And I've listened, we moved to Murray in 1996. I've always listened to the station. And my first appearance on air was when I read a short story I wrote in Young Authors Camp, which was The Three Little Pigs in Space. And my awe sounds weren't really great then, so my voice is a little better now, I think. But I was really excited to see it because the station's been a big part of my life.
And you have to mention the saxophone quartet as well. It was quite stellar.
Yeah, we had a saxophone quartet in high school, and we did two appearances here in this room. All we really wanted to do was play Louie Louie for about 20 minutes, but that got vetoed. So instead, we did a
Miss Stribling wouldn't allow.
Yeah, no, she wouldn't let us do it.
One of the articles that Wesley found says that the night before the button was pushed to begin broadcasting, that lightning struck the tower in Farmington. We've had a little bit of that over the history of the station. But anywho, back to set the picture of the times. Wesley said he started researching Murray State University in the era of the Kent State shootings. And George was a student, came in 68, member of the Pershing Rifles, and became a part of the station due to being a techie. But you left, you were a member of the band Soul Syndicate, and then you became part of a Columbia recording deal with a group called Our Brother's Keeper, and then you pulled back from that. So you've kind of had music in your DNA.
Oh yeah,
all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in hearing more about the programming that was on at WKMS, and you recalled one of the shows that Wesley. Some of the lineup was just pretty incredible. You want to talk about the schedule article you found?
Yeah, the schedule was fascinating. First of all, the station didn't air on Sundays at all, out of respect, I guess. It started at 4 p.m. and then went on till 11, and I think eventually till midnight. The very first week of programming, my favorite program was called Netherlands Church Organs, which I hear was a barn burner.
We're going to bring it back.
And it looks like at about 9 o'clock, student programming started. So there was a lot of kind of really hip programming. Then there was a show called The Black American, which was four children about the role that race played in the country. And it, when you go from light classical and then dinner classical, which was another of the categories, and then start talking about race issues once the 9 o'clock hour happens, I think that's really something.
And tell me about Melange, George.
Well, Melange was our 90-minute program that we did nightly prior to WKMS from the Radio Center. I immediately, like I said, in 68, jumped right into doing that nightly. It was live on WMBS radio. So, you know, literally every night that I engineered, which was a lot of it, as I remember, we would have a patch cord either already patched up or we'd patch it up, and I would call WMBS and maybe play a little music as a test. And then we went on the air, I don't remember what time, it was like 7 or 8 o'clock, somewhere in there for 90 minutes. And it was, you know, I can't remember all the music that was played, probably a variety of popular music at the time. But like I would sit at the console and have one or two persons or people in the little studio next to the control room with two microphones, you know, similar to what we're doing here today, only with glass window separating. And that was our nightly show. And it was done for two things. It was done to promote the camp, the college, and promote what was going on. But it was also training. The big emphasis was the training of the students. And as far as I was concerned, that's what it was for. And that show, I mean, that program went back to, I forgot, back into the 50s or something. It was called the Thoroughbred Hour.
It was 1949.
Okay, it goes back that far to, yep, the Thoroughbred Hour. And it was a 30-minute program. Then it was expanded to an hour. And then I think I read yesterday where it was expanded in 1967 to 90 minutes. And then they changed the name to Melange, which for the life of me, I don't know what that word means. I'd have to Google that one.
I think it's what you eat for dessert.
But that's what we call it every night. And that was our learning place. That's how we learned how to do broadcasting. And I'd played music and all that prior to Murray, but I'd never done anything broadcasting related. So I really learned on the job. As such, you know, as I told you earlier, in my analog recording days, I spliced a whole lot of tape, and I learned how to splice tape over there in Wilson Hall. That's what I learned how to splice tape.
Describe the final project.
Oh, we had the end of the 69 school year or something. We had a final project that every student had to do. And that was, they had to record like the intro of a song and then cut and do the outro, and just to show your ability to do that. And I was in charge of putting it all together. So every student come in, they had to run the board and the board mic, and they would do their little part. And it was all reel-to-reel tape. It's all we had back then. And they would record their little section. And it, you know, in tape terms, it was maybe 20 or 25 maybe 15 feet long at 7.5 inches per second speed. And so I had all of these pieces of everybody's little excerpt with a piece of masking tape and their name on it stuck around the control room, mm-hmm, hanging from the ceiling down to the wall and around, you know. And that I had to put all that together so Dr. Howard probably or Dr. Morgan, whoever, could review those, and that was part of the final grade. And as I told you, I never considered myself an on-air DJ. I didn't think I was really that good at it or anything. But my final thing was I lived in Springer Hall at the time, which was an all-boys dorm. And I don't know what it is today. It's co-ed or what is it? But it was all boys back then. My wife, Suzanne, lived in Hart Hall, and which was an all-girls dorm back then. And but anyway, my thing was I introed my song. I dedicated it to all my buddies in Springer Hall. It was down in the boondocks, which, you know, it's like the furthest building away at the time, you know. Mm-hmm. But I did Down in the Boondocks by Billy Joe Royal, I think. And then I did my cut and my outro and everything. And I never thought it was very good. And I think a bunch of those takes hanging around on the wall were probably mine, several takes, me picking out which one I wanted to submit because I had that ability. Everybody else didn't get that luxury, but I could pick out the best one. But that was just it's one of my memories that really is, I've always thought was funny. Yeah.
It's come a long way, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
We've haven't even had an opportunity to thank you all who are listening for the support that you've given the station over the years to keep it going this long. And thanks to Wesley Bolin of Waterfield Libraries for finding archival material that gives us more certitude about the day the station signed on, May 11th, 1970. Unfortunately, we're a little early. It signed on around 3:30 in the afternoon, and you were there.
I'm pretty sure I was there. I don't want this to be a Brian Williams moment or something. I'm pretty sure I had left school right before that. Like I said, I helped Mr. McClure do the testing work to put it on the air, and literally put it on the air a few times before May 11. But that official day, I'm reasonably sure, because my wife, I know, was still living here before we were married. We got married about a month later. And so she was living here, and I'm pretty sure I came back here, but I think I remember being in the room the day the pictures we were looking at were taken. You know.
And you were in the room with, if in fact you're not doing a Brian Williams.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think I was there.
Okay. You were there with Dr. Ray Mofield.
Yes.
Who's who? The glimmer of WKMS was in his eye for a long time.
He's the father or grandfather of the whole thing.
And he applied for the license for the Board of Regents for Murray State University, and it went on the air in a little studio over in Wilson Hall. And pretty soon he found out that just wasn't good enough. And was part of the moving and shaking that brought about Price Doyle Fine Arts Building. And you were here for the groundbreaking? You recorded the groundbreaking?
I did the groundbreaking. I set up we had a little portable Gates mixer that we used for remote work. And I remember setting it up on a table out here in the yard next to Lovett and running a phone line back into Lovett to get it to Wilson Hall and probably either recorded it or it was live on WMBS. One of the two, I can't remember that. But I did the actual technical part of the groundbreaking ceremony that day.
And you were here, Wesley, you said that you have minute books from the Board of Regents meetings back when George Cumby was among the student representatives going to before the Board of Regents to say, hey, we need this radio station.
Yeah, we went in. I remember going to one meeting for sure, and I didn't speak or I don't have anything to say, but we were showing our strength, you might say. And we were making, telling them what we did and what our vision was and everything. Of course, it was still Dr. Mofield, who I became really good friends with and had a lot of connections with years later, even after I left here, was the real, he was the real push behind it, the one doing all the talking, basically. But we were there just to let them know that it wasn't just him. It was a lot of students who really wanted this. And we saw the vision of what it could do for the school and for Western Kentucky.
And you said earlier that everything that your life evolved into basically began with WKMS and Murray State University. And when I receive an email from you, George, there are like lots of companies. So let's part with you. Tell what you're into these days.
Well, as I said, it's basically two companies, you might say, with a DBA out of one of those. My Kentucky corporation is Audio Creations Incorporated, which I started in 1976. And then I moved my studio operations out of Paducah. Now, through all that period, I worked for WPSD-TV. I worked for Channel 29 TV in Paducah. I went on the road touring for many years doing big concert shows. I did a lot of television audio. It was kind of a forte of mine that I enjoyed doing. And because I had a working knowledge of television, having worked in it. And we did big shows. I chief engineered the Thanksgiving Day Parade out of Philadelphia for about 15 years. But then I had a studio all during that time, and I moved that studio to Nashville in 1997. And we continued to live in Paducah. My wife was a school teacher in McCracken County at the time, and we really didn't want to move. And I had a studio manager and everything. So that evolved as Classic Recording Studios, which is still there. I have it leased out now with a lease purchase deal with Dolly Parton's producer, Kent Wells. In fact, Dolly has recorded three albums there in the last 3 years. She sang on my microphones, my big Neumann German tube mics that I own. But her Blue Smoke album that was released last spring was recorded there at Classic. He operates it as Kent Wells Productions. So I still own that, but he's eventually going to hopefully be buying it from me. And then in 2011, I did a subsidiary of Audio Creations, which is called Mid-America Communications Audio Video Services. That was too long for people to remember, so I shortened it to MidCom, AV. And that's kind of what I go by. But I specialize now in sales of electronic audio, professional audio video equipment. And I do a lot of church installations, churches, schools, restaurants, that those types of things. I've worked even here in Murray. I've done some work with United Methodist Church here in Murray. In fact, we're in a process now of maybe doing a 5-camera new HD upgrade for them. And I'll set them up with streaming. They're currently on Murray Cable, but I'm redoing all that for them. But I do that kind of work now as my kind of passion thing. And I learned to fly airplanes back years ago, so I own 2 airplanes now. That's kind of my hobby. And I bring my planes to Murray. The Murray Airport does all my mechanical work, so I bring my planes down here. So I have a real close connection back with Murray.
And it all started at WKMS.
It all started at the radio center.
Wesley is going to continue to research the period, and I know that we'll get more great information from you, Wesley. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tracy, thank you for providing the music of the day. And again, thank you to all of you listeners for being passionate about this radio station over the years.